Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. This is podcast number 36. I'm George Taylor with you this week, and we're going to continue the podcast that we began last week. I interviewed Anne Baxter Campbell, author of The Roman's Quest, and Trish Horner, co-narrator for my production of the audio version of The Roman's Quest. But there was so much material to cover that it was impossible to bring it to you in one podcast. So today's podcast will conclude that interview. If you haven't heard that first podcast, I invite you to look it up and listen. Go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com, click on podcasts, and you can find the first interview right below the entry for today's interview. Before we begin the next segment, today is Veterans Day, and I want to tip my hat to my fellow veterans out there. As a vet, I know some of what you sacrificed to serve our great country. Thank you for joining me in this effort to protect the freedoms we hold dear. There are some of you who lost family and friends, some who lost limbs or were mentally affected by your service. A special thanks to you. In honor of all vets, I want to share a poem by Regina Puckett. It's entitled A Veterans Day Prayer. This is from her book of poetry entitled Here Among the Ruins. A Veterans Day Prayer. During this day of quiet remembrance of our country's freedom and independence, we are grateful for our soldiers' brave gallantry in a world filled with hopelessness and apathy. We take this moment to stop and ponder on the privileges so many people squander. In this hushed moment, we take the time to reflect on all our brave warriors we hold in such respect. Sending up a prayer for these great women and men, we beseech you to please keep them safe. Amen. And amen again. And that goes out to all our veterans out there. Thank you. So let's turn to the interview with Anne Baxter Campbell and Trish Horner, a reminder of the plot of The Roman's Quest. This is the story of a Roman centurion, Julius, who has eyes for a young Jewish woman, Miriam. Miriam also has eyes for Julius, but a Roman is not who her father intends for her. Miriam is a pious Jewish girl, determined to do the right thing by her God and her parents, and she bows to her father's wishes to betroth her to a Jewish fisherman, James ben Zebedee. Her heart yearns for the Roman. His heart yearns for her, but their love is impossible. Miriam's mother lies close to death, and her last wish is to see her daughter wed. The marriage has to take place before it's too late. Woven through this story is the presence of a new prophet on the scene, a man called Jesus. Toward the end of our interview, I asked Anne if she had questions for either Trish or me. Anne, any questions you might have for Trish?
What did you find the most challenging about the readings? It had to be the passages of the domestic violence. I do have some personal history in that area, and I also have worked for many years with the local domestic violence program here. And you captured, unfortunately, the essence of that. Of that mindset from the friend's point of view, from the victim's point of view, from the abuser's point of view. And as challenging and as struggling as that was for me, as I was doing that, part of my prayer was that someone reading this book or hearing this book can have that aha moment and be able to get the help and be able to get out of those situations.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that. Thank you.
Let's listen to this segment which deals with this issue. Here, Mary has been found unconscious outside her house. She's been brought to the home of Miriam and her mother and father. The doctor has been sent for.
A knock on the door brought Miriam to her feet. She rushed past her father and pulled the door open. "Oh, Lucas, you arrived just in time. Please, can you help Mary? Hannah found her this morning on the street outside her home. Amos carried her here." Lucas bent beside Ema and Leah. He turned Mary's face and examined the bruises before he spoke.
"Miriam, would you please help me? The rest of you, please leave the room."
He pulled the curtain across and sat down beside Mary. With gentle hands, he removed her cloak and lifted the tunic. He said nothing, but Miriam gazed in dismay at Mary's thin frame, bruised so badly it appeared she'd been marched on by an entire regiment.
"She has a shallow cut here."
Lucas pointed to her forehead.
"That's the reason for a lot of the blood."
He shook his head.
"But it's this."
He lifted Mary's head carefully.
"This deep dent is evidence of a broken skull."
Lucas slowly lowered Mary's head to the bed.
"You see here? She has drops of blood seeping from her ears. Her arm is bent where it shouldn't be. The deep blue bruising on the skin around her ribs is an indication that several may be broken."
Mary breathed in shallow gasps. Lucas placed a finger over the pulse at her neck. With his free hand, he placed a finger to his lips, asking for quiet. Miriam nodded, and tears spilled down her face. After a moment, Lucas rose and shook his head, holding the curtain open for Miriam to exit. Ema stepped forward, and Leah stood beside Amos, her fingers clasped together and raised to support her chin.
Will she be able to survive this terrible..."
She turned into Amos's arms. Lucas shook his head.
"There is nothing we can do for her. She's close to death. Is she married?"
"Yes,"
Abba growled through clenched teeth.
"Perhaps Amos and I should go get him."
He jerked his head toward the door.
"If he is to see his wife while she is alive, yes."
"I'll get her mother." Leah ran toward the door.
"Tell them to hasten."
Miriam slipped back through the curtain. She bent to her knees and held Mary's hand.
"I'm so sorry, Mary," she whispered.
She sat there in silence, watching Mary's labored breathing. She thought of the man who had beaten his wife so that she would soon die, and she remembered the cruel soldier who'd meant to do her harm. She recalled Julius and how he'd rescued her that day. She knew he would love and protect her, if her father would just allow it. She bent her head and cried. She was thinking of Julius while her friend would soon depart this world. Mary had lived every day with a beast like the soldier who had tried to harm Miriam, and Kish probably would not pay for what he'd done. At least he wouldn't pay enough. Lucas entered the room. He placed a hand on Miriam's shoulder and shook his head. Miriam looked at the still form and sobbed.
"Where is my daughter?"
Mary's mother, Zella, cried with a raspy breath. "In here, Zella." Ema led Zella into the bedchamber. Miriam stood and wiped her eyes as Zella fell beside Mary.
"I'm sorry, little mother."
Lucas bent beside Zella.
"She is gone?"
"No, she can't be. I just saw her yesterday."
Zella's voice rose to a keening note, and she knelt next to her daughter. Zella rocked, holding her hands to her head. Leah came into the room. She dropped to her knees and placed her hand on Zella's shoulder. Zella wailed softly, rocking to and fro. Miriam's glowering father shoved Kish through the door. Amos followed close behind.
"We found the man drunk on his bed. Look at his knuckles. Look at this blood on his cloak and sandals. There can be no doubt he's the one who killed her."
Amos spat at Kish. Kish shook his head as if rising from a deep night's sleep.
"You abomination! You killed my daughter! You killed my daughter!"
Zella screeched and launched herself at Kish, fingernails clawing for his face. Ema stepped in front of her, and Leah took her arms. "No, Zella, if you do what I'm sure you want to do to Kish, We won't be able to show the Sanhedrin what he did to Mary. Emas spoke softly but firmly to the distraught woman. Zella struggled for a moment before calm and reason began to return to her eyes. Once more she began to weep, burying her face in her hands. Miriam slipped an arm around Zella and allowed her to cry against her. Kish, who'd backed up when Zella jumped toward him, blanched.
Sanhedrin, I haven't done anything wrong. You beat your wife to death.
Amos took a half step closer, fist clenched.
My wife?
Kish asked.
My wife would not get up and fix my meal. I had a right to thrash her. You didn't just thrash her, you killed her.
Lucas gritted his teeth.
Look at her.
He pushed Kish toward the bed where Mary lay. Kish crashed to the floor. He rose to his knees and peered intently at his wife.
She's dead? No, she wasn't dead last night. She was on the floor, and she wouldn't get up. So I fixed my own food and let her lie there. Lazy woman.
He raised his voice.
Wake up, you lazy woman! Show him you're not dead!
He raised his fist to strike. Abba scowled and jerked Kish around to face him.
How did she get outside, Kish? I threw her out. She wouldn't fix my food. Now she's beyond your ability to hurt her further. Let's take him to the Sanhedrin.
Abba nodded to Amos. Abba grasped one arm and Amos the other, and they muscled him through the door. Kish made ineffectual, inebriated efforts to pull away, but neither man loosened his grip.
How about you, George? What did you find the most challenging? Were there parts that tested you that you had difficulty with?
You know, Anne, one of the problems that I have is that I wear so many hats while I do this. Trish can tell you because she was sitting here in the studio with me, and I'm running a keyboard, I'm running a computer, I'm watching the monitor, I'm making sure it's all going down. And I'm surprised I even get effective recordings at all sometimes.
What you need is a kind of a soundboard person.
Yeah, I need... Exactly. But, you know, they cost money, and I don't. So... So probably the character that I had the most hardest time identifying with, trying to portray him as not a buffoon, was Amos. And that's just because I lean more toward being like Leia is than Amos is, kind of stepping out and doing some strange and weird things. Trish can tell you about some of them sometime.
But, uh-huh.
Yeah. But at any rate, full disclosure here, Trish and I have been friends for many years.
Yeah, there is that.
But at any rate, he was probably the hardest I had at portraying as a real character, not as a buffoon.
And yeah, he comes across kind of sometimes as a buffoon.
Yeah, he does. And
but his love for God is deep.
Oh yeah, his love. Uh-huh. There is sincerity and love there. There is also this very great constriction of where he thinks he needs to be.
And he's too worried about what other people think of him.
Exactly.
This segment with Amos takes place as Deborah, Miriam's mother, is deathly ill. It is decided that the doctor cannot do anything, but perhaps if they can find the prophet who heals, then Deborah can be better. As they walk, they talk.
Abba, we need to take Ema to the synagogue. There is a prophet who heals there. Between Lucas and Miriam, they explained their hopes of a miracle from this new prophet. Following Lucas's instructions, they built a stretcher to carry Deborah to the synagogue. At the synagogue, the sheer number of people exiting the area made it impossible to carry Deborah without being bumped. Leah walked on one side, Miriam and Joanna on the other, trying to thread people away from the makeshift stretcher. When they arrived at the steps where Jesus spoke, he was gone. Micah's face fell, and Miriam's eyes filled with tears.
Lucas turned to a thin, bald man with a scraggly beard standing nearby.
Do you know where the prophet went?
No, he and his friends went that way.
He pointed with a sharp chin toward the gate.
I don't know where they were going. Maybe not far, maybe a long way, but it is the Sabbath.
He beamed a gap-toothed grin as though he had delivered a great joke. Then, chortling, he turned and left them. Amos and Micah turned the makeshift stretcher around, and they led the way toward the gate. Every few steps, Lucas would stop someone to ask if they had seen the prophet. Finally, a man entering the gate said the prophet and his followers had been asked by one of the Pharisees to join him for the evening meal. Lucas took Amos's place on the stretcher.
We must have passed him in the crowd without seeing him, Miriam said. Or maybe they took a different street.
They must have, or we would have seen him,
Amos agreed, wiping his forehead.
Sunset begins the Sabbath, so they will have to settle themselves by then, or surely the wrath of God will fall on them. What if we don't find him? How much farther can we go before God's anger is stretched out against us?
I don't know what the Almighty would think about that, Amos. It's his job to judge, not mine. The law says we are to honor the Sabbath and keep it holy. The rabbis say we may travel 2,000 cubits outside our city walls and back again. Some more recent rabbis reinterpreted it at 4,000. So perhaps one could travel all around the interior and even the exterior of this city all evening without dishonoring the Sabbath.
That would be honoring the letter of the law, but wouldn't it be dishonoring the spirit of the law? I wonder if we don't find the prophet by sunset. He might not come to heal her.
Tell me, Amos, are you seeking to become a Pharisee?
Micah asked. Amos blushed.
Of course not. But I'm concerned we could be breaking the holy laws. God might punish us by taking Deborah from us this day, or perhaps by striking another, or all of us with her disease, because Miriam wears no scarf. Deborah also has no covering on her head.
Miriam put her hand to her hair and gasped. Micah's eyes widened as he looked at his daughter. His mind must have been elsewhere, too. Micah's shoulders slumped.
Perhaps we should take Deborah home. One of us can try to find the prophet and bring him to our home, if he will. We can't carry her all over the city to find him. I know all this jostling must hurt her.
He sighed, then turned toward their home, leading the procession back to their house.
No sense in tempting the Pharisees to call for the guards.
Lucas's head twisted to and fro as Micah and Amos spoke. His eyebrows angled upward.
It's against the laws to heal on the Sabbath. I've given out potions and set broken legs on whatever day they were needed. There are some who would say so, sometimes obeying all the oral law of the scribes in addition to the law of Moses isn't practical. Why would one allow a person to die or suffer untreated on the Sabbath?
Upon arrival at their home, Micah lifted Deborah from the stretcher and placed her on their bed, bending to kiss her cheek.
Amos can go after the prophet, right, Amos?
Micah said.
But I don't remember all the directions.
Amos's brow wrinkled. I remember the directions, husband. Leah tugged at his sleeve. We'll go together.
The Roman's Quest by Anne Baxter Campbell is available from Helping Hands Press. It is the first of a trilogy of books entitled The Truth Trilogy. Look for the entire trilogy at myhelpinghandspress.com. The Roman's Quest is available both in print and in audiobook. Look for this book through my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. Scroll about halfway down the page to find the icon for this book, or go to my podcast page. It's narrationbygeorge.com. Click on podcasts to find a list of all the links mentioned in this podcast. The poetry you heard at the top of the program is also available via my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. Scroll down to the bottom of the page for all the poetry books. This poem is from a collection entitled Here Among the Ruins. A special thanks to Ann Baxter Campbell and Trish Horner for taking their time to talk with me about the Romans Quest. We'll be back again next Wednesday when the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest, will again be new. In the meantime, God has blessed you. Share that blessing with someone else.